Thanks for joining us, Andy. Let's start with this weekend's round of A-League games. On Friday night, it's Melbourne Victory versus Adelaide United in what I call the derby with no name. There's always a lot of edge and niggle in this fixture. Which of the many moments over the years between these teams has fuelled the bitterness, do you think?
Well, I think I'm pretty sure it goes way beyond the genesis of the A-League. And it goes, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it goes completely to the colonial boundaries that were drawn and the aggro between Adelaide as a free settlement with pretension and the city of Melbourne, which was more established and equally pretentious. I would draw it all back to there, I guess.
Andy, you'd be the only football commentator in Australia that would go that far back, I reckon.
I'm the only one that old. Is that what you're saying, Carl?
No, the one who's actually listened during history classes, I think. So you reckon it's over the boundaries over gold?
And railways. You know, there was initially a race between Adelaide and Mr. Burke from the Melbourne Club in Melbourne to get a telegraph from the bottom to the top of Australia. So that was arguably one of the first points of competition between the two, and it's raged ever since.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can call this the Burke and Wills derby or the race to the top derby.
Yeah, look, it's a fantastic think tank we could get started here, Andy, but maybe the whole Musket and Cosmina, you know, beach chair debacle many years ago could have fueled it again.
Yeah, yeah, well, I think that, you know, that gave it significant impetus, and it obviously gave it an A-League focus, which is good. And, you know, a lot of the rivalry talk about now between Victory and Adelaide is through the prism of the A-League and you know, the hammering by the Victory of Adelaide in the grand final and the Musket, Cosmina, Stoush, the pissant comment, the send-offs. You know, I think what we do know for a fact, however it originated, we know that there is never a dull moment in these games. It always delivers.
Absolutely. And, of course, Victory have been looking for the kickstart this season. They've stuttered a bit. Just when you think the win against Perth a couple of weeks ago was going to do it, suddenly they let themselves down. But then a comfort-behind win against Phoenix last week seems like they might be ready to roll again.
Yeah, I think so. And it was a deceptive match last week. I mean, Victory's season hasn't been impressive, although they've been closer than the points table suggests. But, you know, that's of small consolation to Victory fans. And, you know, patterns are setting down in a season. It just becomes a ridiculous pastime to sit back and look at the seven games that precede and said, oh, we were close here and a near thing there. I mean, the pattern is now set, or was, going into the Wellington match. And it did become a really important game for that reason. And even though they were two down at half-time, and it wasn't looking great, even to the neutrals, not including the Victory fans themselves, they were two fantastic goals from Kaladerovic, unbelievable headers in quick succession. And it put a bit of a... it was a bit unrepresentative of the match, because up until that point, of course, Victory had a goal disallowed by the VAR, and they hit the post through Troisi, I think it was, and played some pretty good football, and then were stung by these back-to-back efforts. Fantastic. You know, as good as you see in the world headers from Kaladerovic. So at that point, if you're a Victory aficionado, you're thinking, oh my God, where does this end up now? And I think it was reflected so brilliantly on the coach and the players and the club, the resilience and the strength of the club, that they could come back from that situation. And probably in the end, if you're doing it purely on chances, they probably win that game 7-2 on the second half showing. So, you know, let's hope it's not a flash in the pan, because the competition needs Victory in the heavyweight division, not down in the featherweights. And let's hope this is a kickstart for them. Like I said, I think that result's more reflective of their general play this year, but, you know, you've got to get results. They're a club that knows that. They're a club that's delivered on that in the past, and let's hope this is a kickstart.
How about Adelaide United? A couple of really good results early, backs against the wall sort of stuff, and a little bit indifferent over the last couple of weeks, but had a good win against Western Sydney Wanderers. Where are they at, do you think, under Marco Kurz at the moment?
Well, I think they're sitting beautifully. I mean, I don't know how representative my view is, but I just wasn't expecting a lot from Adelaide this year because of the turnover again. And as a matter of sheer ignorance, I mean, I had no idea about Marco Kurz, right? So my first feeling was it's based on experience and watching this happen from time to time at clubs. My second intuitive response was just based purely on ignorance. Like, who is this guy? How good's he going to go? And I'm just really happy with where Adelaide are at. I know they'd be more comfortable with a few more points, but I think he's done a terrific job. They've been hammered by injury, and now they have to deal with the departure of Moore, which might prove a blessing in disguise. Time will tell. But I think he's done a terrific job. Got into a cup final where they were unlucky to lose, and has got them positioned nicely in the A-League. Now, they get a couple of players back, and importantly, if the club has the stomach for it, can go back into the transfer market to replace Mark Moore, then why wouldn't Adelaide fans dare to dream big? Because this team certainly has the fabric to seriously challenge.
And the story that Timmy Cale might make his way over to Crowita territory, what do you make of that?
Well, geez, it'd be good if it happened in time for tonight, but I can't see it. Well, you know, it's a mysterious situation because I don't know what's going on at Melbourne City. Maybe nothing's going on at Melbourne City, but they're not the noises around the place. Now, without giving any particular credence to the quote-unquote noises, I think if Timmy was a little bit more patient, he would have found himself leading the line from start to finish for Melbourne City. That's what I was watching because, you know, I can understand why Warren Joyce hadn't played him as a starting player till now because Timmy had been deeply enmeshed in the greater good, the fight for the greater good. That's getting the Socceroos across the line. So at club level, given Timmy's injury status at the time and his international commitments, I can completely understand why Warren Joyce was backing in another horse. But whilst I'm watching that other horse go around the track in Ross McCormack, I'm not seeing anything that is going to long-term dislodge Timmy Cale. And I just think that, you know, Timmy, this is without knowing if anything's going on. I think if he was patient, he'd have been starting for Melbourne City and could have avoided whatever disruption this is going to cause. Now, then you have to make the assumptions that he must have somewhere else that he's going to go, or else why wouldn't he hang around in the meantime? And maybe it does give some credence to the quote-unquote noise that's around Melbourne City. I don't really want to buy into that because speculation doesn't help anything. But I do feel very strongly in the view that Timmy, sooner rather than later, unless Ross McCormack was hiding a few rabbits under a few hats, I don't think he could have continued to start the matches because, to be brutally frank, I'm not seeing any world-beating performances from him.
I'm just wondering, Andy, whether, with Warren Joyce's supposed breath coming in and changing the culture, whether he's just adopted the Sir Alex Ferguson way of doing things, that the minute he's not the biggest ego in the change room, is the minute these guys get moved on. And we saw it time and time again under Sir Alex Ferguson. Warren Joyce obviously learnt his craft as a coach under Sir Alex over a long period of time, very respected under him. You know, could it be a little bit of Sir Alex channeling himself through Warren Joyce?
Well, it could be, and it's but even by my answer, could be just suggests it's all speculation, and I wouldn't know. I mean, it is. You know, you just got to join whatever dots you can find, and I try and do that without then speculating. But Brian Marwood, the football boss of the City Football Group, arrives in Melbourne for his regular reconnaissance trip down here, and once he's left, then people start leaving the club. So obviously. Obviously, one agenda has been backed over another. I don't even know what those agendas are. I'm just talking purely in football terms. I'm desperate for Timmy Cale to make the World Cup next year. Not because of a particular allegiance to Timmy. In fact, no such thing exists. I just admire him like everyone else, but I have no particular contact with him. But I just think, as an exclamation point on what has been arguably the most remarkable career, to have gotten to four World Cups and scored is what our game needs. Our game needs to develop these brilliant stories about our brilliant players and put them in bronze on the Australian Hall of Fame discussion landscape. And pretty hard to beat in any sport in Australia. To have an athlete go to four tournaments, the biggest of which Well, there's no bigger than that in anything, Olympics or anything. And then to score in four of them, I mean, this is gold for Australian football if it can come to pass. And it's for those reasons, primarily, that I just want this sorted out, and I want Timmy on that plane, and I want him to get one appearance at least at the World Cup where he can score that goal. Because that you can't... It'll never, ever happen again. And he is walking amongst us now, this bloke. And the more we can do for the sake of the game to build that story, the better.
Well, on Saturday afternoon, Brisbane Roar against Wellington Phoenix. Now, we've established you're a historian of the highest repute. And, of course, past and recent history tells us Phoenix have no chance in this game.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find it hard to believe in Wellington Phoenix, period. You know, the start of every year, there's a sign of hope. And really, over the course of their tenure, they've made the finals how many times? You know, they're just... I'm just waiting to see what they want to deliver. And it's really hard to back them in. I feel sorry for the coach, I guess. I don't know how complicit he is in this. He's only new to the A-League. And when I watched him at the start of the season in person to their match against Melbourne City, I think it was, you know, I thought they look like a well-organised team that's trying to prove a point by the way they're playing. The fact that it's collapsed so badly since, with these two matches at home, most recently against Melbourne Victory, but before that against Brisbane, when they've squandered match-winning leads at home, yeah, speaks to a lack of fabric in the organisation. You know, a lack of leadership on the field. Where's Dario Vidicic? You know, where is Kaladirovic outside of those two brilliant headers? Maybe he's thinking, I've done my bit, that's enough. But I even want to go beyond the players in this with Phoenix. And I just want them to be something. If they're going to be in this, can you be something? I mean, I can't see it. And I get hammered across the ditch, understandably. I wouldn't like it if I was a Wellington fan listening to this either. But fair dinkum, they are proving that there is such a thing as a free lunch.
And you're right, because this is after they had the so-called final warning, where they had their licence extension, and there was so much debate over whether they did have a future in the league, and they were going to come back and be a different club, and they're obviously not showing that.
Well, exactly. I mean, I can't see a change. I cannot see a measurable change. Now, there are difficulties that confront the Wellington Phoenix. Ernie Merrick's educated us to those if we needed educating, and they're not dealt with easily, right? The FIFA windows, the fact that New Zealand operate in a different confederation and the Phoenix get hammered when it's qualifying time, all that sort of stuff. I don't know the answer to that, but mate, if you can't take the heat, don't come into the kitchen in the first place. I mean, that's, you know, we didn't set the geography of the world. This is just a reality we've got to deal with. But, so I have a measure of sympathy for them on that front. I just don't know how you solve it. But, I don't know, you know, they have been given this licence extension and they're supposed to be hitting performance measures along the way, and I don't know when it's reviewable. I just get my answer to the Wellington Phoenix always ends up with the sentence, I don't know.
Brisbane Roar, 2-0 winners last week away from home against Western Sydney Wanderers. I like the potential here, but they've had their problems this year themselves. I put them in the same category almost as Melbourne Victory, promising a lot. Really, there's a lot of winners across all lines there. Good experience in that team, but they don't seem to be getting too much consistency this year.
Yeah, well, I'm prepared to give them a bit more time. I'm not as confident as you. Well, I think Victory are, if you're to compare the two teams, I think they're a cut above as far as a roster's concerned, but that's up to those players to prove that on the field. But, you know, I love what Brisbane Roar have brought to the competition. But this year, and I'm prepared to give them time on this basis, I respect Johnny Aloisi's view as a coach. I think he's starting, if he hasn't completely proven himself, he's certainly well down that path after the Melbourne Heart exercise, which was very difficult as a coach. And I think he's done a good job in Brisbane. And now he's got a real test. I think he can pass that test, and I'm prepared to give him some time based on his explanation as to how disrupted the pre-season was. Now, you know, a lot of people can say, and they might be right, in time they might be proven correct. You know, that's just an excuse. He's just buying time, blah, blah, blah. And if that proves to be correct, then he'll be hung out to dry for that. But in the meantime, I'm prepared to accept that analysis, and let's see if they can start to build some momentum. I think fundamentally the team lacks a little bit of balance, and it tips too much the way of experience. I see Macaroni and he scored a few goals and blah blah blah. When the whips are cracking with the big teams, I just don't see the likes of Macaroni having the mobility to seriously compete when the good teams who are playing well are cracking the whips. I mean, to score goals is great, and to play well against the Wanderers last week, on prima facie, it didn't look particularly difficult in an A-League context, because I'm massively disappointed with what the Wanderers threw out last week, and I hope they can turn it around. But, you know what, that's a long answer to the Brisbane Roar situation. I think they've got some talent. I don't think they're going to win the comp. But let's see how much better they can be by the end of the season.
Fox Sports cover all the games beautifully every week, mates, and we love watching it. But the big one that probably would even get you a little bit more excited, you're always excited, Andy, but this one here, of course, the Sydney Derby. And even though I'm from Melbourne, I'm relinquishing the crown of the biggest derby in Australia as this one. The Western Sydney Wanderers versus Sydney on Saturday night. Form doesn't really matter in these derbies, but it's hard to go past Sydney FC on this one, isn't it?
Oh, it's impossible to go past Sydney FC. I don't think they've been great this year, but so far, apart from a couple of flashes, but been doing well enough to win matches. I just can't see the Wanderers discovering the requisite level of form to win the match tomorrow. But it is a great occasion. You know, I do a radio show on the Macquarie Network, 2GB, which is one of the major talk stations in Sydney, part of the 3AW stable for the Melbourne listeners.
Mm.
And, you know, it's hosted by a guy who's a great sports fanatic, but bread and butter's rugby league. And he now says out and proud, over 5 years of doing this program on radio, that the Sydney Derby, A-League Derby, is the best sport in the best non-final sport in Australia.
Mm.
It is a magnificent occasion. It's must-watch. I think there's a little bit of the edge has been taken off this week because of all the other stuff around the game at the moment, which is unfortunate. Until that fog clears, you know, there is going to be a little bit of a lull in proceedings, but this is a fierce contest. You know, and it is, you know, I'm going to be hated by your listeners now, which is based in Melbourne, but it is the biggest derby in the A-League, and it's purely because of Melbourne City's fan base, or lack thereof, by comparison to Melbourne Victory. Not the passion of the City fans as they stand, but in Sydney you have a stadium which is, you know, bona fide split 50-50. Until we get that in Melbourne with the City Victory Derby, it can't be as big, because Melbourne City just don't offer the same numbers. You get me?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the challenge for Melbourne City. So, you know, that's always, Victory is always the muscular opponent in the stands because of the vastness of the Victory membership. That's much more evenly spread between the two Sydney teams, and that's why it's a bigger football match.
Of course, Perth Glory at home for a change against the Newcastle Jets. You know, they've bemoaned the travel so far this season, but Jets are a different proposition. Even away from home, I reckon they'd give this a bit of a shake over in Perth.
Yeah, they won the last time they were there, actually, Newcastle, which is the first time they've ever won since almost the records were taken. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but it's been a long time. But I think it would do well of us all, I think, just to pay a little bit of respect to Perth Glory, who have had a horrendous travel schedule to start the season. Now, I think there are other question marks that about Perth that they need to answer as an organisation. However, every team from Adelaide East, often you hear from the coach about, oh yeah, we had to go to Perth and then come back and get ready for a Friday game. And they have to do that once, maximum twice in a season. They've had to travel to Wellington as well as the rest of Australia 6 times in the opening 9 weeks, or something like that.
Mm.
I mean, it is a penitential travel schedule, and you can imagine the bitching and moaning from every other coach from Adelaide East if they'd had to deal with something like that. And so I think a little bit of due acknowledgement to how strong the Perth team is as a dressing room to be as competitive as they are at this point of the season, having dealt with that. And I think getting home will help them against Newcastle. I don't think they're playing as well as the Jets, and there's still too many players down on their roster because of injury to be a real threat at the moment, but they'll come back, and by which time Perth will be ready to have a proper challenge, I'd imagine. I think maybe Newcastle might keep on their momentum with a win away. It'd be great for them if they can.
And on Sunday, Central Coast Mariners, fired by Darryl Braithwaite and horses, they will take on Melbourne City away from home. But again, the Central Coast Mariners are a different team. They had a big win in Wellington away from home. They come down to Melbourne City, who had a little bit of a, you know, it was a game of two halves by definition last week. That was probably, you know, one of those games where in the first half they were awful against the Jets, and the second half they really took over.
Yeah, they should have been out of the game by half time. Maybe even at 1-0 down, if the Jets didn't concede that penalty against Melbourne City, converted by Ross McCormack. Maybe at 1-0 down, they might have found it a little bit hard, but, you know, that game came, that goal came right at the end of the first half, and you get back in the sheds and you have a word or two, you clear the air about one or two things, and evidently one or two things did be clearing up, because we saw Luke Bratton snap at the coach over something. And so something was simmering and evidently was very effectively dealt with, because Melbourne City in the second half, you know, they were really good. And, you know, that is where Luke Bratton needs to be as a baseline, right? If Melbourne City are going to do anything with Luke Bratton in the squad, then that's a baseline performance for him. I thought his second half was excellent with more to come. And if Melbourne City can start the match in the way they finished it last week, then they'll be very good things. But, you know, I'm in love with what the Mariners are doing at the moment, because if ever there was a club on death row, without any talk about them being cut, and I don't even want to give oxygen to the notion of cutting an A-League team in general, but you know, the Mariners had lost their way as a football club, and this is just my opinion, but you know, it was depressing going there, and it was depressing listening to the noises at the ground. It was depressing listening to the messages coming out of the club. I just found it depressing. And when football should be a celebration, and that community, from nothing, started an A-League club, been to grand finals, won the comp, just a fantastic example of what can be achieved. And I think they're getting back there, and that's why I think it's a brilliant story. You know, they've rediscovered their mojo as a club. I think on-field efforts have been orchestrated really well by Paul Okon, who's been under scrutiny as a coach, fair enough, rightly so. And he's answering those criticisms in the best way possible. And the Sean Mielenkamp, the CEO, who's a really bright administrative prospect, I think, for football in Australia. You know, it's got the easiest set of circumstances to be running an A-League club at the moment, and it's particularly more difficult in a smaller market like the Mariners. But you know, Mielenkamp, I think, he's doing a fantastic job. And that Mariners story at the moment, I hope they can keep winning and keep proving themselves as a football club and getting them back where they were, because I think it's one of the great talking points in the comp at the moment.
Well, Andy, thanks for your predictions for this weekend. If you don't mind me saying, one thing I do miss, I know the late and great Mike Cockerell obviously passed away a while ago, but one of my favourite things to do on the weekend was to listen to you and him as a head commentator, you as a special comments guy, just go at each other the whole time during games and not always agree with what you were seeing on the pitch at the same time. It was highly entertaining, mate, and I've got to say I miss that.
Well, I miss that and more. I miss Michael deeply. It's still very sad.
Thanks very much, Andy. I really appreciate your time today, and we're looking forward to your call on Fox Sports this weekend.
Thanks, Carlos.